की जन्मद्रिया परमहंस परिव्रजाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराजशील प्रभुपाद की आनंदवोड़ी वैष्णव बृंद की ममाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त बृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायपुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की वरदापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुनामाई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त बृंद की गौर प्रेम निंदे. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gaura. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami Dinamini. Namaste Saraswati Devim. Gauravani Prajarini. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Parshati Deshadarini. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
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 संसार सागरे मग्नं दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मं ग्राह्य गृहीतांगं मामुद्धर भवान्नवाल. श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे. मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सभरा सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव. भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पदयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो. नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःख शमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम्. जन्माद्यस्य यदोन्वयादितरतस् चार्तेष्वभिज्ञस्वरा तेने ब्रह्म हृद य आदिगवये मुह्यन्ति यल्सूरय. तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकं सत्यं परं धीमहि. धर्मप्रोज्जितकैदवोत्रपरमं निर्मल्सराणां सतां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम्. श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा भरै ईश्वरः सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यतेऽत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तत्क्षणान्. निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसंयुतम् पिबत भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः. सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नमः. यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदम् अभेदकृत्यम् द्वैपायनों विरहकादरमाजुहाव. पुत्रेदि तन्मयदया तरवोऽभिनेदु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि. यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिथिदीर्षतां तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तं व्यासूनम् उपयामि गुरुं मुनीनां. नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल्. कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाजि विजृम्भनां मुरारेर् मधुरिन्न कनिकापि कापि कापी ममाहोम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणे श्रीमल गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वंदे नंदव्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्णशां यासं हरिकलोद्गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्द परमानवे नमः पीतांबरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्खं कौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायं अतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वदालयेशम् अनिशं हृदि भावयामि कोमलं कूजयन्वेणुं श्यामलोयं कुमारका वेदवेद्यवरं ब्रह्म भासदां पुरदो मम मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृवातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः शङ्कराधिकारी नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्द नाम संकीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द सो इन द श्रीमद् भागवतम् when we begin the seventh canto the seventh canto has a special feature compared to all other cantos in the Srimad Bhagavatam because in the seventh canto the topic that is discussed is what is known as Uti. Uti in the Shastra means Udi means karma vasana. Karma vasana means actually our propensity to act in a particular way, due to particular way of the desire to perform karma in this world, how this has come around. This is the topic that is discussed in the seventh canto or the saptama skandam of Srimad Bhagavatam. And because this topic is so important in relationship with the conditioned soul, Sri Yashoda Maharshi or Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, there is a lot of interaction or interactive questions and answers in the beginning. When Parikshit Maharaj questions Sukadeva Goswami with this point of view, that why these things are happening, and in answer to that, Atrasargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshanam Udaya. Sargam is the topic that is discussed in the third canto, the primary creation. And Visargam is the topic discussed in the fourth canto. And we saw in the fifth canto, Sthanam, the location of all those people who do not want to go by Krishna's instruction or want to follow their own path. For them, a special place is reserved for them. And that is why it is called Sthanam. Sthanam means a place for recommended for them. And that is why in the fifth canto or Panjamaskandam is completely full of the description of the hellish planets. It describes the whole universe, and eventually the last chapter, Sri Yashoda Maharshi says to Parikshit Maharaj that this place is meant for those people who do not want to abide by the laws of Krishna or abide by the laws of the Creator. So eventually Sthanam is discussed in the fifth canto, and then we saw in the sixth canto what is known as Poshanam. That was the pastime of Krishna. We discussed a particular leela of Atrasargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshanam Utaya Manvandaram Ishanukatha Nirodho Muktirashrayah. That in the fifth canto it is Sthanam, in the sixth canto it is Poshanam. That is what we were discussing till last Sunday. And now we go on to what is Sthanam Poshanam Udaya. Udaya means Udi. Udi means Karma Vasana. Karma Vasana means our propensity to act in this world. How did this come about? And this is the discussion in the seventh canto. So karma vasana is an important topic, because this is what it is all seventh canto is about. Seventh canto is all discussing this one topic known as vasana. Vasana means, in other words, our propensity. How this propensity has happened to us. Why these different kinds of propensities exist in us. And how come one propensity can change into another propensity later on, and how it can be changed. This is what is discussed in the seventh canto in detail. So this topic vasana or karma vasana, as it is meant, udaya karma vasana, that is how in the Bhagavatam it says, udi means nothing but karma vasana. How did this vasana develop in us like this? And what happens when this vasana wakes up from inside? And that is all what it is in the seventh canto. So to explain this vasana, to explain vasana, there are different types of vasanas which exist in us, which is known as the generally classified as the sadvasana and durvasana. Sadvasana means the propensity to act in a proper way, like a devotee. And durvasana means the propensity to act like a demon. These two vasanas, they are known as sadvasana and durvasana. It's also referred to as shubha vasana or ashubha vasana, or in other words, auspicious vasanas, auspicious propensities and inauspicious propensities in us. Or they also say it is known as shubha vasana and malina vasana, or dirty propensities in us. So all these propensities exist in all of us. It is not possible to take it away, because once these vasanas are completely gone, we wouldn't be here in this material consciousness. Our very existence is based on this vasana. Therefore, among the jnanis also, they will, when they discuss about it, normally we say we have got the gross material body, and then we have got what this is made of, five material elements. That is how we refer to the material body, Pancha Bhaudiyam. In other words, five material elements constituting the five material elements. That is this material body, Pancha Bhaudiyam, Panchabhudam, or the five material elements are created by the five material elements constitutes this material body. So in addition to that, we have the subtle body. Subtle body is mind, intelligence and ego, false ego. These all constitute the subtle body. But within the subtle body, there is another body that existing, which is known as vasana shariram. Vasana shariram, it is referred to by another name as karana shariram. Why it is called like that is, vasana sharira means it is a subtle thing, but it exists inside in the form of a body. And because this goes with us all the time, it's also considered to be a body which we hold on to. And this vasana shariram or karana shariram, as it is referred to by the jnanis, this vasana shariram, it exists within the subtle body in a very subtle way. In other words, this vasana shariram forces us to act in particular ways in particular conditions. For example, one may have cultivated a lot of due to our own activities in different lifetimes prior to this, even this body, in different lifetimes we have acted in different ways, either in a pious way or in an impious way or in a demoniac way. So any action, any karma will be followed by a vasana along with that. That is the nature of karma. Karma, this is the beauty of karma. The law of karma is so fine, and so at the same time, so subtle it is, that any action when it is performed, immediately it develops in the form of a vasana inside. It has, that is the reaction of that karma. Immediately you may not experience the final reaction to the karma, but the karma will go inside, and it gets a place there in the form of a vasana. So Vidyarani Swamiji has discussed this in a book called Jivan Mukti Vivegam. That is the book which talks about these vasanas in detail, how these vasanas are formed and what kind of vasanas exist. And he has referred to that in the Shrimad Bhagavatam also. There is reference to those vasanas. And while referring to these vasanas, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned that the udaya karma vasana. Karma vasana is known as the udi or the propensity in us, what that exists. What does vasana means? Vasana means basically not thinking about the reactions or not thinking about the after effect of our action, doing something like that. We all do that because we do not know the consequences and we act. That is the nature. Now, one may say that, oh no, I thought about it very much. But thinking about alone is not enough. This is the difference. You may think about something and you are doing something, or what suits your sense gratification, you think it's okay. And that's what we accept. Oh, I thought about it. We all say like that. Oh, I thought about it and then I took this decision to do like that. But that is not the Shastri conclusion. Shastri conclusion is that, have you studied the Shastras and understood what the consequences are? And are you acting on that platform, on that understanding? Then you can say that you have discriminated things properly and then you have acted on that basis. But vasana generally means, karma vasana means, that activity is what you perform without any understanding. In other words, in ignorance. Completely in ignorance, you are acting. And when you are acting in total ignorance, whatever that is done mechanically, without scrutinizing the after effects of our action, if you perform such activities, what happens from that? This is called karma vasana or uti. Or this karma vasana, that vasana nature in us, is something comes along with us for a very, very long time. In the Vidyarani Swamiji, about that, he has mentioned that dridabhavanaya tyakta purva para vicharanam yadadhanam padarthasya vasana sapragirtida. In the Jivan Mukti Vegam, that is how he calls it. Dridabhavanaya tyakta purva para vicharanam. That without any vicharana means without any analysis, without understanding it, what he is doing is right or wrong, doing things out of by nature or by encouraged by one's own in a mechanical way, one start doing things thinking that, oh, this should be all right, and then he carries on doing that. Dada bhavanaya tyakta purva para vicharanam yadadanam padarthasya vasana sapragirtida. That is, such a thing is called vasana. There is no importance there given for discrimination. Discrimination has no value in that, because your discrimination has no meaning anyway at the end. Because what's our discrimination? Without knowing anything, this side or that side, neither, what discrimination can we make out of it? So that's why it's mentioned like that. Then vasana has got two types of vasana. They are also mentioned that vasana dvida prokta shuddha jamalina tatha malina janma hedu stya shuddha janma vinashini. That out of these two kinds of vasanas, that vasana dvida prokta, that one is called malina vasana, and that means the dirty vasanas, and the other one is called the pious vasanas. They both exist. Now out of that, the pious vasanas will take us into the path of liberation, to free ourselves from the conditioned state. And the impious vasanas or the demoniac propensities, what is within us, those vasanas are cause for the next body, another body again, that will bring us into another body. So like these two kinds of vasanas continuously act on it. Vasana antivida prokta shuddha jamalina tatha malina janma hedusyal shuddha janma vinashini. Then what should we do? That also Vidyarani Swamiji says in that Jivan Mukti Vegam, he talks about it. He says there that Shubha Shubha Abhyam Margha Abhyam Vahandi Vasana Saril Paurushena Prayatmena Yojaniya Shubhe Padim. That Shubha Shubha Abhyam Margha Abhyam, that from these vasanas, what one should do in life is that one should learn how to direct the impious vasanas into a pious route. Although these impious activities will constantly come and encourage him to act in the impious manner, but he should take shelter. He should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And by Krishna's mercy, one can, by serving Krishna, by engaging in Krishna's service, one can direct those impious propensities which exist in us into a pious direction, which will eventually help us for freeing ourselves from this conditioned state. So that is how Jivan Mukti Vegam discusses about the vasanas. Now, why is so significant this vasanas in the 7th canto? Because in the 7th canto, you will see there are three personalities life we have discussed. అండ్ గ్రేటెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ హిరణ్యకశిపు. హిరణ్యకశిపు స్టోరీ ఇన్ ది సెవెన్ క్యాంటో ఈస్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్. అలాంగ్ విత్ హిరణ్యకశిపు వీ హ్యావ్ ద గ్రేటెస్ట్ డివోటీ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ ఆల్సో. ప్రహ్లాద్ మహారాజ్ లైఫ్ ఈస్ ఆల్సో డిస్కస్డ్ ఇన్ ది సెవెన్ క్యాంటో. బోత్ దీస్ పర్సనాలిటీస్ హిరణ్యకశిపు అండ్ ప్రహ్లాద అండ్ అబౌవ్ ఆల్ ద పర్సనాలిటీ హూ టుక్ ప్రహ్లాద ఇన్ ద డైరెక్షన్ శ్రీ నారద ముని ఆల్సో ఈస్ డిస్కస్డ్ ఇన్ ది సెవెన్ క్యాంటో. All the three personalities, Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad Maharaj and Sri Narada Muni, they are all victims of this vasanas. They are all victimized by vasana. They were all victimized by the vasana. That is why in the seventh canto you will see when you read through that they are all coming and telling us, particularly Sri Narada Muni and Prahlad Maharaj, that take care of your vasanas. If you don't take care, you can end up like my father, Prahlad says, like Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu's story, as most of you know, we discussed earlier about the what happened, who is Hiranyakashipu. We know from the third canto that four Kumaras went to the Vaikuntha planet. They went to see Mahavishnu there, and they were Jaya and Vijaya, the two gatekeepers. They put their stop. Gate there, they stopped him there. They stopped them, the four Kumaras. And the result was that what prompted them to do that? Kumaras immediately got upset with that and they cursed Jaya and Vijaya that they should go to the earthly planet and they will have to take the bodies, demoniac bodies, for three births. And that is how they had to come here. In the first time, they appeared as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Second time they appeared as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, that is when Lord Ramachandra came and killed both of them. And in the third time they had to come as Shishubala and Dandavatra in three births. And Shishubala and Dandavatra were killed by Krishna. So these three births they had to take. And when they left Vaikuntha, when they were leaving Vaikuntha, what made them to get angry like that? This is a question we have to ask, isn't it? I mean, after all, we say in Vaikuntha everything is wonderful. Place, there is no kuntidam. That means there is no anxiety. Vaikuntha is supposed to be a place which is free from anxiety. So when you go there and if you meet people like Jayan Vijay who gets angry with you all the time, it's not, I don't know whether we'll consider going there straight away. So unless you want to make sure that at least here everybody gets angry with you. But at least there you want somewhere peaceful. So if there is no peace in Vaikuntha also, if that's the same story like here, then we may have to twice think about it, why this has happened there. So like we were discussing about Chitrakedu in the sixth canto. Chitrakedu's vasanas took up when he saw Lord Shiva and Sri Parvati together. Chitrakedu's vasanas from this world, which has not left him. These vasanas, the nature of the vasanas is, that they are lying inside all the time. And it's not gone away. It's lying there. Why it's not coming out is, it has not got the favorable situation for them to sprout. That's why it's lying there. But once a favorable situation develops, the environment is favorable, these vasanas will come out straight away. There is no doubt about that. To explain this fact, in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi presented the story of Ajamila to tell us. Ajamila was a very first class Brahmana who was trained nicely by his father and trained him so nicely that there was no question of Ajamila falling down with all the training what he had. The father has taught him how to live a spiritual life, totally spiritual life, like any good Brahmana would have loved to live. And he was trained up. And when he was told for Stalivagam and for Paunamasi, they wandered the Shamata. And Shami, the grass from the forest for performing those ceremonies, Ajamila's father told him to go to the forest and bring this grass for their sake. And when Ajamila went there, and when he saw the scene, what he saw there, this lady who was intoxicated was singing and dancing and moving around. Along with her, he saw this man also who was equally intoxicated and trying to be happy together. And first time, when Ajamila saw that, he taught himself this is not proper way to behave. He taught himself this is not the proper way to behave. And he was telling his own mind, don't get attracted to these things. He was trying very, very hard to control his mind, but he couldn't control. But somehow or the other, that vasana which was inside in his mind, which was lying very, very much hidden at the very bottom of his mind, suddenly came out from there. And it started telling him, this is not a bad thing to be held. See how things can happen. And that very second, when this thought came to Ajamila, Ajamila's immediate reaction, we tried very hard, when they say that there is in the martial arts, they have 18 different kinds of ways of controlling. But all that 18 techniques he tried on his mind to get it under control. But the mind, he couldn't. They couldn't control the mind. The result was that Ajamila started going after her. And she was doing her job as she's supposed to do, and she carried on with it. But the Brahmana as he was, Ajamila had all the background, all the training, everything from his father. In spite of that, Ajamila at that point in time thought himself, this is a better life. What can you do? If somebody thinks that this is a better life for me, this is where I'm going to go. And suddenly all that training, all that education, he has been educated very well by his father. All that education for a moment, he put it behind. And he went after her. Why did this happen? Sometimes in this life also, sometimes we say about someone, normally it is happening, we say, oh, he is such a nice person. He's so good. You know, he has been so good to everybody and everybody likes him. But then suddenly he goes and does something which is totally opposite to his nature. And everybody starts thinking, why did he do that? How could he do that? Sometimes in the newspaper also you can read that. Sometimes somebody murders or kills children or women or somebody like that. And there will be a report. All the neighbors will say, oh, he was such a nice family man. And he loved his family so much. And he did so much for the village, so much for the society, this, that and everything. We could never believe that he could do such a thing, anything. But there is nothing you can do about it. Because the vasanas were inside. Only thing is, at the right opportunity came, the vasanas came out, and it forced him to act in that particular way. That's all. It happens the other way also. Somebody who was very much involved, say in a lot of people whom we all know, many, many people like that, that who are addicted to so much sense gratification, who are addicted to so much sinful life, and who are addicted to so much of sinful activities, suddenly one day you find him carrying the beads back, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He's getting up 3 o'clock in the morning, come to the temple room, he's chanting his rounds, he's taking prasad, he doesn't want to know anything about else in this world. Why this is happening? This is also vasana. Why? This vasana that was inside, there was a good vasana in his mind. It was lying underneath. But when an opportunity came, when he has got the opportunity to associate with some devotees or came into contact with somebody who is spiritually inclined, immediately that vasana came out from him. That's all it is about. That it is the sadvasana that was inside that has suddenly turned that person from a demoniac nature to a devotee's nature. Exactly like it is the same durvasana or ashubhavasana or malina vasana that has turned him from a good person, as we consider, to suddenly a murderer or a sinful personality. So it is the effect of these vasanas inside. And in the Bhagavatam says, one should utilize one's human life for one purpose, to discriminate these vasanas in us. And when asubha vasana or impious propensities comes out, immediately we should turn to Krishna service and change the direction from that into pious roots. Otherwise, we all could be victimized. This is the reason Ajamila's story is there. Ajamila's life, if you can compare that, how much he has fallen down, to what extent one can fall. One day Ajamila himself said, there is no more further to fall, he said. Is there any more I am to fall, he said. So that is how he has analyzed his life. And this is necessary because in our life also, we may all think that manasa vachava karmana, neither by my mind, words or action body, I have not done anything sinful in my life. Any heavily sinful person will also say the same thing. There is no doubt about it. We all claim we are all very fantastic people. We have such pious activities behind us, and that is why, that is what we say about ourselves. But the fact is not so. It is not like that, because the very fact that we have a material body in this world and we are experiencing the distress of this material world is an extremely strong indication that there is plenty of vasanas inside accumulated from different lifetimes, and that vasanas is, that is what is propelling to act in one form or the other in this world. Propelled by this false ego, propelled by the vasanas, one acts in this world. So this is why the vasanas are so important. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, these three personalities, Hiranyakashipu, Prahlada and Srinivasamuni, if you study their life, you will see how you can turn these vasanas in the right direction. Hiranyakashipu, Jaya and Vijaya, they got angry, they got upset with the four Kumaras. And because the four Kumaras cursed him, they had to come. In other words, if you upset somebody, if you upset especially great personalities like Kumaras, the four Kumaras, you can expect that you will develop this impious Ashubha Vasana, or bad Vasanas will develop inside. This is the result of upsetting or offending the great personalities. That is what has happened to the Jaya and Vijaya. Jaya and Vijaya, although it was a tweep, and Sri Rajari Swamiji says in the Bhagavatam, that this desire to Jaya and Vijaya to fight, it has actually come from Krishna. But the way it happened was, the mechanism by which how this whole thing was transformed for Jaya and Vijaya to come to this material world was, they were prompted to offend the four Kumaras. Otherwise, Krishna could have sent them here straight away. Jaya and Vijaya, there was nobody who was going to stop them from doing that. Stop Krishna from doing that. But Krishna wanted that to show us that this is how it happens. You upset somebody, especially personalities like the four Kumaras or the great spiritually advanced devotees. If you upset them, if you offend them, the result is that that offense alone, if it has hurt them, that will come back and stay in you as a Ashubha Vasana. And that Ashubha Vasana will, that has to follow its action. And with the result was that the mentality of Jaya and Vijaya, when they came here, it was demoniac. And they turned into demoniac nature. That is why Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, both of them, who are Jaya and Vijaya, their attitude, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that was such that they decided to destroy everything. Vedic culture, the Brahmanas, the cows, the temples, Vedic literature, everything. They didn't want to know anything about it. They'll be taken out of that. And then, in other words, they've developed an inimical nature towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why this inimical nature came? Because they offended the four Kumaras. Sanaga, Sanandana, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara. Chatusanas, as they are called, they were offended by the four Kumaras. So, when they were offended, they had to come like this. And that was, the result was that, in three births, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Shishupala and Dandavatra. Three births they had to take. And after that, when that dirty vasana or the bad propensity what he had inside, when that was dried up, Krishna says, now you can come back. You're alright to stay here now. So this is how it is. So from this one lesson, you see that if you offend great devotees, great souls like Kumaras, the reaction is like this. If it is true like that, the opposite should also be true. If you please a great soul, if you please a great devotee of Krishna, immediately their mercy will also follow in the same way. And there are so many people who have enjoyed the mercy of Krishna in this way through their great devotees of Krishna. We see that all the time, many, many personalities, they have enjoyed the mercy. Why? Because they receive this mercy from their own. They please some personalities. Prabhupada used to say that a little success I had, he said, is because I did such things that pleased my spiritual master. So by pleasing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada got this conviction that I was receiving his mercy, which he repeated every time. Often he said, mentioned this. And this conviction came from this, that if it happens in one way, it should be true the other way as well. And that is what has happened in the case of Prahlada Maharaj. Prahlada Maharaj actually should have been a demon, because after all, his father was trying to train him up as a demon. Father was the greatest demon one can imagine. When you consider Hiranyakashipu, modern day demons are nothing. Actually, they are nowhere near to him. What Hiranyakashipu could do in this world, he could turn the whole planet upside down. That is how powerful he was. And not only this planet, all the 14 planetary systems he could turn. That is how Vajra Samhayo Yuvaha. In the Bhagavatam, referring to Hiranyakashipu's determination and the strength, it mentions like this, that Hiranyakashipu, it was his son, this Prahlada Maharaj. And what has happened to Prahlada? Prahlada originally should have come out as a very demoniac person. And that was the reason Indra caught hold of Hiranyakashipu's wife, Kayadhu. When Hiranyakashipu went to perform austerities and penances, to acquire strength, to challenge the demigods, and to take control of the whole universe, Hiranyakashipu was so determined. It is Bhagavatam, when you read Hiranyakashipu's austerities and penances, you will see Brahma is saying there one word, that nobody has done penances like Hiranyakashipu, neither in the past nor in the future will anyone will do. That is how Hiranyakashipu is glorified by Lord Brahma himself. So that is the powerful personality Hiranyakashipu was. And that Hiranyakashipu wanted a son, and that Kayadhu was carrying Prahlada Maharaj in Prahlada Maharaj, and Hiranyakashipu decided to go to perform the penances. When he started performing the penances, Indra, who is always watchful of the situation, sensed the danger that's developing. So he decided that he should now do something about it. And the first thing he did was, he realized that Prahlada Maharaj is, the Hiranyakashipu's son is inside. Unified, get rid of the father, the son will turn out to be a demon. That is how he came to Kayadhu, caught hold of Kayadhu, and started dragging Kayadhu from there. The intention was to kill Prahlad inside. That is what Indra wanted to do, because he was more frightened that Prahlad, when he comes out, what kind of demon he will be. This is what in his mind all the time going through. So Indra was dragging him away. It was at that time that Sri Narada Muni appears on the scene and told Indra, leave him alone, leave Kayadhu. Took Kayadhu to his own ashram and told her to stay there. Because in Sri Narada Muni sensed at that time that this Prahlada inside, he has some good propensities in him. And perhaps if I instruct him properly, it may have its own result, good result. So to show to show to us that this Shubha Vasana and Ashubha Vasana, or the pious propensities and impious propensities, are both in us. They're always there. And depending on whose association you get, or whose mercy you receive from, these very impious propensities can be wiped out from inside. They will go away in due course. But that requires the mercy of the great soul. And Prahlada Maharaj, that is what he got from Sri Narada Muni. Sri Narada Muni continuously instructed Prahlada Maharaj. And because Sri Narada Muni's words are so powerful, being Krishna's direct representative, that Sri Narada Muni spoke to Prahlada Maharaj within the womb, and that stayed there. But the result was that, at the age of 5, when he came out, he started saying, Kaumara acharet prajnyo dharmam bhagavadaniha durlabham manusham janmam tadapyadruvam arthadam. Will any devotee, when a child will speak like this, is born in a demonic family like Hiranyakashipu's son, is talking like this, Kaumara acharet prajnyam, that one should start Krishna consciousness when he is a Kumara, at the age of 5 years, one should start at that early as possible. And this is, why did this happen? This is Sri Narada Muni's mercy to Prahlada. Dharmam bhagavada aniha. That Bhagavata Dharma, or Krishna consciousness, is the topic what Prahlada Maharaj discusses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can see that If you receive the mercy of Sri Narada Muni or a personality like that, automatically this changes our thoughts. Our bad propensities goes away and immediately the pious propensities take hold of us. So our actions are based on vasanas, and that vasanas can be turned by the mercy of the great personalities. This is what it is telling us. Now, to impress this point strongly, in the same seventh canto, Sri Narada Muni talks about himself, what happened to him. This story is not mentioned in the first canto. First canto, it only says, Narada Muni says to Vedavyasa Maharshi, when he started compiling Srimad Bhagavatam, that I was in a previous birth, I took the body, I was born as the son of a Dasi or a Shudra woman. And from that childhood, I got an opportunity to associate with some Yatranvaham Krishna Katha Pragayada. In the Bhagavatam, that is how it's mentioned, that he had the good opportunity to hear Krishna Katha, stories about Krishna. Yatranvaham Krishna Katha Pragayada Anugrahena Shravanamanoharam. That due to the mercy of the great sages who were performing the Chadurmasyam at that time, that Sri Narada Maharshi got the opportunity to hear about Krishna. And that Shudra woman's son has become the greatest devotee. He became Sri Narada Muni in his next life. So he remembers this story, what has happened to himself. Narada Muni said in the beginning itself, he says to Vedavyasa Maharshi, that Krishna consciousness is the most sublime process which changes a person. And for that, the finest example is me, he says. Vedavyasa Maharshi got completely amazed by this statement, that he is the finest example, he says. And it is then that Narada Muni talked about his past life, as he was the son of the, born as the son of a servant maid, and how he was interested in a life, in spiritual life, from an early age, due to the mercy of the great sages. So, due to the association and due to the mercy of those great personalities who were performing Chaturmasyam at that time, Srinarada Muni got the next life as Narada Muni's body. Earlier body life, he was the son of the servant maid. He had no knowledge, no complete in ignorance, interested in living a normal life, and there was no other opportunity to develop in a spiritual life. So from there, he has come to the position of Narada Muni. How could this happen? It is the mercy of those great sages. And this Narada Muni says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that before, how did this happen to me? He says, why did I have to take a birth of a servant maid like that? That is also vasanas again that caused this. Because in his previous birth, before he took birth, he was a Gandharva, name called as Upabarhana. So this Upabarhana, Gandharva, he was actually in a very glorious position, glorious in the sense that he was enjoying life in a very high standard than what you could imagine. He had so many apsaras women with him. They were all traveling together singing, and Gandharvas are a species who enjoy singing and dancing and feasting. The best thing what one could do in this world, but they have such nice bodies, bodily attraction wise, they have such beautiful bodies, Gandharvas. And their singing capacity is so high. There is nobody here who we can compare to them, to the ability of Gandharvas to sing. And then you have a group of women along with them to sing and dance and move around in this universe all around, wherever freely. So you can imagine that from the material viewpoint, even if you look at it, they had a very, very comfortable and happy lifestyle. So this Gandharva, Upabarahana, in one occasion, he did something which caused this problem for him. That is, all the Prajapatis together, they were performing a sacrifice. Lord Brahma was also present there. And many, many great sages were present there. So in that assembly of the Prajapatis, our Upabarhana, this Gandharva, went along singing and dancing there. And not only that, unfortunately, he was also a little bit intoxicated. So you can imagine, already he had the pride due to beauty. That's what all these things bring. The beauty, bodily beauty brings pride as well. And due to the youth brings pride. And then the material lifestyle, the living standard and the comforts and the all the opulences associated with also brought pride in him. And beyond than that, the little bit of varuni that has gone in, that is also intoxication, also has made him to act in a make that stupid thing there. But when he started acting in a silly way, all the Prajapatis and the sages were present there in that sacrifice. They told him, "You are acting like a Shudra, go and take birth as a Shudra now." And that is why Sri Narada Muni had to come here and take the birth as a Shudra, as the son of a servant maid in his next life. So why did this happen? This has also happened because he offended these great personalities, Prajapatis there, and the sages who are present there, by his activity. So all these are vasanas inside. Vasana balal juhava narayana namagam sudam. Ajamila brahmana, call his son Narayana. Why did he call? He called him because there was some good vasana in his mind which encouraged him or prompted him to give the holy name of Krishna to his son. Vasana balal juhava. Due to the power of vasana, that is how it said, due to the strength of the vasana, Juhava, he called his son Narayana Namagam Sudam. He called his son as Narayana for this reason. So that is how the powerful vasanas are acting. So you can see, in the case of Hiranyakashipu, in the case of Prahlada Maharaj, in the case of Srinarada Muni, all the three major personalities in the seventh canto, they were all driven by vasanas. And it is the same vasanas that is in us as well. And these vasanas don't go away easily. When it gets the right opportunity, now we know why we say we should be careful about association. This is why it comes. Association doesn't mean anything else. Association means, if you keep the right association of devotees, there is no possibility of these bad vasanas coming out. Although we may have so much inside, the chances of them manifesting is very limited, because normally in the association of devotees you don't talk rubbish. Otherwise, when you go out and you mix with people, normal people who are busy with their sense gratification, what do they discuss? They discuss sense gratification. And they can discuss it so nicely, and they discuss very minutely also about their sense gratification, that subtle way that association will develop certain vasanas inside. And that's why it's mentioned that one has to be careful about this association. That is one thing. Secondly, the thing is that when one gets an opportunity to associate with great soul, one has to be extremely careful that by that association one should be able to gain something. And that profit is, by pleasing the great personalities, one get the opportunity to advance in the spiritual life by their mercy, by their association. So all these things are in the seventh canto. So seventh canto is called Utaya Karma Vasana. Karma Vasana is the topic that is discussed, or Uti or Karma Vasana is the topic that is discussed in the seventh canto. When the sixth canto was over, as we discussed last Sunday, when the sixth canto was over, the question came up, Parikshit Maharaj's mind started getting a bit concerned that Didi Devi wanted to kill Indra, and eventually Marudevas were born, but they were taken away by Indra, and at the end that Indra has won the battle, that Didi Devi's children were always suffering. And seeing this, Parikshit Maharaj also felt very unhappy. He was unhappy in the sense that he started analyzing this in his own mind, and he started logicizing and asking this question at that time, that why is that this Krishna is taking the side of this Indra all the time in all circumstances. So Sri Rajovaja, Parikshit Maharaj asked by three verses this question he put to Sudeva Goswami. He said to Sudeva Goswami three questions in the three verses. He said to him, Krishna is supposed to be Samam. Samam means equal. Equal means he is equal to everybody. He doesn't have any neither friend or enemy. As far as he is concerned, whether demigods or demons, they are all on the same level for him. See, these demigods and demons, this concern is for us. Why? because the demoniac nature and the demigod's nature, these are all parts of the modes of nature. They come from the modes of nature, the three modes of material nature. That is what it is causing this. When we say nature, the three different modes. What are these? The goodness, sattvikam, rajasam and tamasam. Or in other words, goodness, passion and ignorance. So these three modes of nature, is that is what makes somebody as a demon or somebody as a demigod. According to the type of nature, modes of nature, one is, he will act in that particular way, in the demonic way or the or a devotee's way. So, or demigods. So here you find in the Bhagavatam that Krishna is summoned. Krishna has no modes of nature. Modes of nature is for us. It doesn't, or the demigods or the demons. But Krishna has no modes of nature. So because he has no modes of nature, he is equal to everyone. He is not partial to anybody, partial to devotees or partial to demons. But all the stories till the end of sixth canto, Parikshit Maharaj says to Sukadeva Goswami, this is most my understanding about Krishna so far, but from all the stories what you have told me, I find that Krishna has always been very partial to the demigods. In everything, he has supported them and he has protected them in all situations, whereas demons are always losing in this process. So this is what he says in the first verse itself, that why this is happening, situation like this. Secondly, he says to Parikshit Maharaj, says to Sukadeva Goswami, that these three modes of material nature, actually it is very difficult to understand the difference between the modes of nature. Sometimes we think that somebody is in the mode of goodness or somebody is in the mode of passion, but it's very difficult to say the real nature in which his mind is going through at that particular stage. Although some of his activities will be an indication of the particular mode of nature that person is experiencing or person is living through. Out of these three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, at one time, one mode will be higher than the other two. In other words, all three will not go up or all three will not come down. One of them will overpower the other two. That is the beauty of these modes of nature. If you look yourself, you can see that. That when the mode of goodness is predominant in this material world, more spiritual activities will go on in this world. Or in other words, people will become more pious. They will understand the purpose of spiritual life. The desire for spiritual life will increase. And also, the mode of goodness will encourage a person to inquire about the goal of life and also the purpose of life, and higher values will come into their life. They will be more attracted to simple lifestyle. They will be free from the false ego and more realizations in them. They will tend to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness seriously. This is the mode of goodness. When the mode of goodness predominates, you will see in the society this happening. When the mode of passion predominates, you will see another lifestyle where people will be extremely busy with advancing on the material side of life. That is one thing. That's mode of passion. It's a mode of passion that makes a person to act like that. That they will take everything as this life as so important, and they'll be very busy in playing with the material nature. They want to improve their sense gratification standards, and they will not be able to see further than that. All they could see was up to the point where they can enjoy their sense gratification to the maximum. So that is the mode of passion shows. Mode of passion is when it is predominant. Mode of goodness and mode of ignorance will be down. They will not be powerful. So when the mode of passion is powerful, a society will act in that way. And when these two are gone, when the mode of ignorance is predominating, at that time activities will be simply hellish and will come up in destruction of the whole thing. Because in other words, everything is done in total ignorance. That is when the mode of ignorance predominates. So these three modes of nature is strongly present in this material nature. And these modes of nature actually represents the Maya, or material nature is actually the creation by Maya. Maya's nature of controlling us is through these three modes. That all the living entities, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, that Devi Kesha Gunamai Mama Maya Durateya Mami Vayam Prabhadyandi Maya Medam Tarandide. That this Maya or material nature controls us through these three modes of nature. So it's very difficult to overcome. But just to understand how the modes of nature works, we can also, it's very difficult to know it precisely what mode of nature one is in. But by his actions, certain things you can understand. And one is very much conscious of what one is doing. One will have a slight feeling of the particular mode of nature, what one is experiencing. And mode of nature is not purely dependent on oneself. It also depends on the environment he lives. The Krishna says in the Bhagavadam, what are the factors which affects the modes of nature? Desham, Kalam, Agamam, Javam, all kinds of mantra he chants, the water he drinks. So many things affects a person's life. One's own personal life, if you take, you can see, for example, if you consider that you are going on a pilgrimage, say to Badrinath or somewhere like that, to an isolated place where it's free from this modern materialistic civilizations. So when you have decided to travel from here, from at home you have decided to leave at a certain time, go to the airport, catch a flight to Delhi and spend some time there, and then from there to you're going to Haridwar or Rishikesh, and then you are traveling further to Badrinath. So if you observe your own mind before you travel, say from home, at home you are very well geared to go on this pilgrimage to Badrinath. You are thinking at that time that I will go to Badrinath, spend some time there, chant Hare Krishna for some time in the holy dham, and with all good consciousness and good thoughts and good ideas were inside, possibly you may get an opportunity to see Krishna in Badrinath or any holy places on the way, all the way in route from Rishikesh and Haridwar. So with all these good ideas in your mind, you are leaving home. You look at your own mind at that time, and then and then you came to the Heathrow Airport or Gatwick, wherever you are flying from. You, as soon as you get to the airport, you start seeing the whole activities going on there. People are pushing trolleys, somebody's checking out, all kind of mess there. And in that, you're also with your trolley moving around to get into the plane. By now, if you start looking at yourself, you will see that that consciousness what you had at home before you left has slowly started changing. It's already started wavering now. Then you are concerned at that time getting a good seat and getting a place somewhere so you can sit 10 hours. I have to tolerate all this now for another 10 hours or 12 hours in the flight, whatever, constantly coming with the trolleys, offering you alcohol, drink as much as you can, eat as much as you like. They won't let you sit there peacefully with their so-called service. And they carry on serving you so nicely till you get down, land down there. And in the between, if you're any one of your five senses are not getting enough engagement, they show you now movies right in front of you, you can watch there. Even that they won't let you have it. Added to that, they give you the music also from the top. So somehow, this is the materialistic nature, continuously agitating the senses through eating, drinking, and engaging the eyes, engaging the ears. And if you are not peaceful, then you start looking at others to talk something rubbish to each other. So like this 10-11 hours goes through. By the time you get to Delhi or Bombay, wherever you are traveling to, I'm just giving an example. By the time you get there, all this good consciousness what you had at home when you left, when you were chanting on the beach, by now the whole mind is gone in a completely opposite direction. I'm only talking about myself. I don't know, there may be others who have different. This is what has happened to me. So I have to say this, that I am the one who has gone through this. And you get there, and then they start saying the whole process at the airport, what goes through there, and then you want to go to get to Badrinath somehow. So naturally there is no straightaway transport there, so you have to stay overnight. And you stay at the hotel somewhere, you checked in and managed to, so many hours you were in the plane, so you just wanted to walk outside a little bit and see if you can get some fitness in the body to make another journey. So you start walking around in Connaught Place or somewhere in Delhi like that. All you could see is that all the advertisements and posters, which is encouraging you for more sense gratification, and all kinds of movie posters and all kinds of things, what goes on. Young people trying to find happiness in this world in different means, discos, jock clubs, this, that, everything, all sorts of things, like any modern Western city will offer. Delhi has also equally the same amount of facilities they are offering these days. We are trying to catch up with them as quickly as we can. So, this is going on. So, you are still thinking, why have I come now all the way from there? I've come to another hell, from one hell to another hell I've landed. And then you want to escape from there. The next day morning you catch the first bus and get out from there and go to Haridwar. And as soon as you get to Haridwar, you feel a little relieved, because Haridwar is a little different than Delhi. It's not all that gone that far yet. Haridwar is the place you start remembering Ajamila was. This is where Ajamila chanted and called Krishna at the end. This is where Ajamila went back to the spiritual world. It was from Haridwar this all happened. Thus you know that it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. So at least some feeling for Ajamila comes in there. After all, we are also one of those Ajamilas. So we also think like that. And then we from there, you want to go to Badrinath. So when you get to Badrinath, somehow you manage to get a transport, go to Badrinath. When you get to Badrinath, completely scene has changed. All those facilities what we had in Delhi and in other places, that's all finished then. Everything is very austere, and to find a place to stay is difficult. When you get a place, even the facilities are very minimum. And in added to that, everything is geared around for some spiritual activity related to the temple. So pilgrims are coming, they are going to the temple, they are coming down from the temple. There is festivals going on, or there is different programs going on at the temple. So you're looking around, you are seeing the Himalayas all around, icy mountains, and the material nature, all beautiful. Alagananda River is flowing there, Mandakini, along with that. And all these things, when you look at that, you started thinking, I'm not surprised why the sages have come here. It is such a wonderful atmosphere. When you see Alagananda and Mandakini, where Sri Parvati used to bathe, where in the 10th canto you will see, where she had got problems with Nalakubera and Manigriva, all these things happened there. So that place automatically brings you a feeling of the mood of goodness there. And that, so when you left home, if you had looked at your own mind, you will see you had one good own consciousness. And then when you came to Heathrow and traveled in the plane and came to Bombay or Delhi, wherever it is, you had another consciousness. And then when you came to Haridwar and through Haridwar got to Badrinath, your consciousness is again changed. So you can see, in Badrinath, you are experiencing more or less the pure mode of goodness. In association with the modes of nature, you are experiencing the goodness. That goodness of material nature was influencing you so strongly that it was automatically affecting you. Similarly, when you were in Delhi, either it was the passion that was influencing you. The Rajogunam has grown so strongly in oneself that Rajogunam was showing its true colors, that you are walking around in Konar place and sometimes you could see that some of the things were getting, being attracted to it. It was not possible to control the mind. You started looking at it. And why is that? And then you can understand, analyzing your own mind, you can see that it is the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, that has hit you so strongly. The whatever little goodness was inside, that's gone by then. So the passion and ignorance has taken over. And at that point in time, no goodness is there. And that is why we say the mood of passion is predominating at that time. So at different times, when you were walking around, you saw something in Connaught Place or somewhere. You saw something and first you looked at it. You started thinking, oh, this is very degrading. It should not be shown like this. But you have looked already and you could see that the mind has already been drawn by that. That is the mood of ignorance. That ignorant mood, ignorant consciousness. And in Shastra, mode of goodness, mode of passion and mode of ignorance has its own qualities. Very detailed description of that. What is mode of goodness? Mode of goodness is symptomized, or the symptoms of the mode of goodness is is knowledge and light. In other words, vidya and prakasham. Knowledge means spiritual knowledge. Fully situated in spiritual consciousness. That is mode of goodness. And prakasham. Prakasham means enlightened. enlightenment. That means not falling from that position all the time, peaceful, satisfied, and fixed in Krishna consciousness or in spiritual knowledge, and not falling from that position, always in that enlightened condition. That is the symptom of the mode of goodness. The symptom of the mode of passion is what? Abhimanam and pravarti. See how clearly the definitions are. Only when you think about it, you can appreciate that. Abhimanam and pravarti. Abhimanam means pride. All the time proud of what he is doing. And all the time busy with something. These two things, if you see anywhere, you can take it from that. These two things come from the mode of passion or rajogunam. Rajogunam is the cause of this. Abhimanam and pravarti. Pride as well as activity. Like this, now do you require any more explanation what modern civilization is all about? Modern civilization is based on these two things. Pride as well as the activity, pravarti. That continuously developing new things. They have to develop all the time and feeling proud about this. Is that not true? That is it not this whole modern civilization based on this principle? Whether you call it advancement, they give different names to that. They call it advancement. But from the Shastram you can understand advancement doesn't mean any of these things. Advancement is not this. This is actually it's not called advancement. It is actually driving closer to the hell. That's what this is all about. But from the description in the Shastram you can see that Abhimanam and Pravarti, or the pride as well as activity associated with that, is what is known as the Rajogunam. Rajogunam is a symptom of that. From this you can also conclude that the so-called knowledge which has come out of such a civilization is also not knowledge. It is also ignorance. From the Shastric point of view, all this so-called knowledge that has been thrown at us in the name of knowledge is considered to be, from the Srimad Bhagavatam analysis, it is nothing but ignorance. Because the result of these activities is binding. It's bondage and birth after birth accepting different bodies. So any material, any activity by body, mind or intelligence, if it's not ultimately freeing oneself from this conditioned existence, or if one is able to free oneself from transmigration of these bodies, that is not considered to be knowledge from the Vedic point of view. It is not knowledge in the mode of goodness. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nashayam atma bhavasto jnana deepena bhasvadaha. That jnana deepam, or the torchlight of knowledge, Krishna calls it like that. Jnana deepam, that is how Krishna says. Jnana deepena bhasvadaha. That jnana deepam, or torchlight to shine in our heart, to understand things correctly, to see things properly, Krishna says mood of goodness is necessary. It's not only necessary, it's absolutely mandatory. If you do not have mood of goodness, in the mood of passion, you will not be able to appreciate the spiritual knowledge and the value of spiritual knowledge. That is the defect of the mood of passion. Mood of passion means the symptoms are always disturbed. Always trying to look for happiness, and ultimately he has to leave this world in that disturbed state of mind. So therefore you can see in the Satugunam is associated with light, knowledge and light and enlightenment. Mood of passion is associated with pride and activities. And the lastly, Ajnanam and Alasyam. This is the symptoms of Tamogunam. Tamogunam means laziness and inactivity. All the time laziness and ignorance. Ignorance and inactivity. So, different species in creation also fall into different categories. Demigods normally in the mode of goodness. The demons normally in the mode of passion. Yakshas and Rakshasas in the mode of ignorance. This is how it is mentioned. And we are a mixture of these three. That is what the human species is all about. We are a mixture of these three modes of nature. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, why are they discussing these three modes of nature so much in depth is that we also have to know that this is what is going on inside, in us. And by cultivating spiritual life, one can transform themselves or develop themselves into the mode of goodness. You go into the position of the demigods. And if one becomes addicted by the lower modes of nature, one has to accept the body of the demons, demonic bodies, asura body, or the modes of ignorance, the Rakshasas, or the Rakshasas body. So these three things are decided by the three modes of nature. Now, that these three modes of nature is present in everyone, that one cannot escape from that. So why we were talking about this is that these three modes of nature, the three modes of material nature, Sattvam, Rajas and Tamas, is present and is controlling us very, very strongly. Now, in our normal lifetime, you have to link one to the another. That is because in Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says that one who wants to advance on the path of spiritual life, he has three processes available. What are those three processes? One is known as the Karma Yogam, other one is the Jnana Yogam, and the third one is the Bhakti Yogam. Karmam, Jnanam and Bhakti. These are the three processes which as Krishna has explained and discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. There are other yoga systems also, but they are all supplementary to these three. For example, Sangha Yogam helps the Jnana Yoga process. Ashtanga Yogam helps the Jnana Yoga process. So different yoga systems are only supplementing these three main yoga processes which Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Karma Yogam, Jnana Yogam and Bhakti Yogam. Now, out of these three yoga systems, if you take these three yoga systems, you will see there all these three yoga systems are linked to ourselves in one way or the other. How is it linked? The linkage is that if you experience, if you follow the Karma Yoga process, what actually you are doing is you are actually making your activities in a yoga process, or in other words, activities related to the body. It is the bodily activities that is predominating the Karma Yogam. Karma Yogam is referred to the body more than anything else. As much as Jnana Yogam is referred to the intelligence. So Jnana Yogam is possible for those people. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam also, Jnanam naivati yatnam munirapavadade brahmatattvam tashanvan ghadam tulpada bhaktim sharanamaide yastasya mukti karagre todhyane bihatulyam puna asugaradam chitta chanjalya hedo abhyasadashu shakyam tadabhirdayadam tutkriva charudabhyam. Then Vedavyasa Maharshi says that this Jnana Yogam process is such, it is easier and it is good for those who are inclined that way. What kind of people? Na narvinno nadiyasto bhakti yogostu siddhida. Then edrchaya malkadasu jada shraddho viyapuman na narvinno nadisakto bhakti yogostu siddhida. Then those who have no interest in the Karma Yoga, those who are no interested in the Bhakti Yoga process, and those whose intellectually they want to advance, for them Jnana Yoga process is recommended. But this, remember that this intellectual process is not the type of intelligence what we talk about in this material world. In our normal day-to-day intelligence, when we refer to, we talk about intelligence relation to developing sense gratification. That's not considered intelligence. This intelligence refers to those who have the genuine and serious interest in advancing on spiritual path, who have complete control on the mind and the senses, and who have the adequate capacity to go through the shastras and develop that process through the process of Jnana Margam. So that is very, very rare thing. But Krishna says that na nurvinno na adhisakto bhakti yogostu siddhida. That those who are very, very renounced to this material world, who have already seen this material world, analyzed in their mind, came to the understanding that there is nothing much to gain in this material world except advance on the spiritual side, for them, Jnana Yoga process is recommended. Now, one party who is very attached to activities all the time, they have to be engaged, otherwise they go uneasy. For them also have to be engaged in something. For them, Karma Yoga process is given. That let them engage their activities in such a way that they can somehow or the other perform their activities in relationship with Krishna, and with the result that they advance from the process of Karma Yoga and come to the process of Bhakti later. So Karma Yoga is for those who are addicted to that, who are inclined in that direction, or who are results of activities, or who takes pride in activities. And Jnana Yoga is those who performs activities to advance on the path of spiritual life through the process of knowledge. And there are people who do not belong to either of these two. And that is why it says that Namirvinno na disakto bhakti yogostu siddhidaha. That he is not attached to anything so much, but at the same time he is also thinking that what is this life all about. He is getting the feeling that he is not able to find any happiness in this life either. At the same time he wants certain comforts in this world. For them, bhakti yogostu siddhidaha. For them, Krishna says the bhakti yoga process will work. So where does bhakti yoga comes in? Just like we said, the body is the one which comes predominates in the process of karma yoga. The brain is the one, or intelligence is the one which predominates the jnana yoga. Similarly, for the devotee or for the person who are trying to advance on the path of Krishna consciousness, or in other words, who are trying to develop attachment for Krishna consciousness, the mind is the most important thing. That is what one has to remember. By developing, you cannot study Srimad Bhagavatam through your intelligence. It is mentioned again and again by different commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says there that Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Yeyam Na Vulpatya Na Tikaya. That Vulpati, by your knowledge or by your intelligence, you cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is understood by Na Vilpatya Na Tikaya, nor by the commentaries that has been written about it, but Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Yeyam. By devotion, and devotion means the main tool or instrument in this is the mind, not the intelligence. This is where the things can go wrong. Many people understand that if I study all Srimad Bhagavatam and I acquire all the information in the Bhagavatam and keep it on my head, everything, that will studying Srimad Bhagavatam. That is not studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Studying Srimad Bhagavatam means understanding these and absorbing that consciousness of the great devotees like Kunti Devi, Bhishma Pitamaha, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and so on and so forth. A list of great, great devotees, Vritrasura, Ambarisha, Gopis and Vrindavanam, Uddhava, Akrura, an unlimited number of devotees, one after the other, Vedavyasa Maharshi is present in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you understand these devotees, if you understand their consciousness, and if the same consciousness is developing inside, in oneself, then you are understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the way to study Srimad Bhagavatam. On the other hand, if you start studying Srimad Bhagavatam saying that in such and such a year this happened, so and so was born in such and such a place, he travelled by such and such a transport to such and such a place, he lived there for so many years, he moved on to that place and he spent so much time there. These things are history. This has no meaning. There's no significance in as far as spiritual consciousness is concerned. Consciousness is understanding Kunti Devi's mind, understanding Bhishma Pitamaha's mind, understanding Dhruva Maharaj's mind, understanding all the great devotees who are listed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When you understand Srimad Bhagavatam like that, then you can understand that you are understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. By Krishna's grace, that is happening. So this realization from Srimad Bhagavatam is that is what Chitta Adratta Mridai Vijindya Bahubi Siddhyandi Janmandarehi. That Krishna says that after many, many births, chittardrattamradai, that the mind starts changing. When the mind is changing, our consciousness is also changing. It's no point changing. Intellectually, you may absorb a lot of information, but that is not good enough. That chittardrattamradai, vichindyabahubi, siddhyandi, janmandarehi. That after many, many births, by Krishna's grace alone, that such a thing can happen. That one is able to absorb the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. What Kunti Devi want us to understand, what Bhishma Pitamaha want us to understand, what Ambarish Maharaj wanted us to understand, what Chitrakedu wanted us to understand, Prahlad Maharaj wanted us to understand. When we understand them, and that is changing our understanding and our way of thinking, then we understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is the way the Bhagavatam is to be understood. So what do we understand from this? What we understand is that the mind is the most important thing. It is no point getting everything here. It is here that the change has to happen. And when that change is happening here, automatically the change will happen in one's life also. It will, one's dealings with others, one's nature, everything will change along with that. And for this reason, this is the same question what Parikshit Maharaj was asking. Parikshit Maharaj was asking here to Sukadeva Goswami. The same question was asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj to Srinarada Muni earlier. And that is why this whole seven canto start with Sri Narada Uvacha. Then you can see that when Parishad Maharaj put forward this question, why the demigods were protected, why the demons were always killed by Krishna, in answer to that, and when he was perplexed, the answer, the way Sri Sukha Maharshi answered that question was, he said to Parishad Maharaj, I am not at all surprised that you have asked this question, because the very same question was asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj also earlier, your own grandfather, at one instance, your own grandfather asked this question to Sri Narada Muni. Only thing is, it was asked in the Rajasuya sacrifice when Krishna was present there. So, when this whole story came up, and that is how it is followed by the appearance of Lord Nasimha's appearance and Prahlada Maharaj's story, it all comes later. But prior to that, what has happened was that in the Rajasuya sacrifice, Krishna was present there. Rajasuya sacrifice was performed to please Krishna. That was the ultimate objective of Rajasuyam. Rajasuyam was 17 months and 17 days it lasted in Indraprastham. And at that time, this great sacrifice was performed. Krishna arrived there from Dwaraka with all the family members. And that is a whole discussion. The 10th canto, it comes later. But in essence, what happened was Krishna arrived there. And in the 17 months celebrations, Krishna was honored as the chief guest in that Rajasuya sacrifice on advice from Sri Narada Muni. Because Yudhishthira Maharaj felt obliged. Kunti Devi and the five Pandavas felt so protected by Krishna. And when they got the throne, when they got into the throne and the power to manage the planet, entire planet, they realized that this has come only because Krishna wanted them to be there. And Yudhishthira Maharaj had this strong conviction that Krishna is behind all these things, and it will be ungrateful or it will be inappropriate if we do not honor Krishna properly. And that is how a message was sent to Dwaraka inviting Krishna to come. And Krishna also happily accepted that. Because it was Pandavas who invited Krishna, Krishna accepted that. Why? Krishna knew that they are devotees. So devotees' words, Krishna always liked to honor. So he went there. He went to see the Pandavas, and Pandavas arranged a massive festival for 17 days. And that detailed discussions are there later on. But anyway, in that Rajasuya sacrifice at the very end, what we find is that these two, Shishupala and Dandavatra, Shishupala was particularly present there. He was pulled into that by the youngest of the Pandava, Sahadeva. Sahadeva went and invited him and brought him there. So in that sacrifice, Shishupala turned out to be extremely violent towards Krishna. At the end of the sacrifice, Rajasuya sacrifice, there is a ceremony known as Agrasana Puja. Agrasana Puja means, at the end of the sacrifice, the chief guest is honored in a very, very opulent way. A lot of presents are given as dakshina to the guest, and all the performers of the sacrifice, namely the Pandavas, they have to pay their obeisances to Krishna and ask for forgiveness for any errors offenses committed during the sacrifice period, and asking for Krishna's blessings. This is the process of this sacrifice. Rajasuyam lasted, as I said, 17 months and 17 days. That is how long it lasted. So, in this sacrifice also, in this Rajasuya sacrifice, which Yudhishthira Maharaj has organized, at the very end, when Krishna was being honored, up to that time, Shishupala somehow controlled his mind. But to the extent what Shishupala has hated Krishna is beyond our imagination. That is how much he hated him. Shishupala could not even look at Krishna. Shishupala could not look at him, not even talk about him. He won't even call Krishna with any respectable way. Him or he, that's how he referred to him. As soon as I see him, he will say like this. He was getting burning inside, the hate. And that is how, to what extent, Shishupala hated Krishna. So this Shishupala, up to that point, due to the pressure from Pandavas and others, he was controlling himself, seeing all this honor given to Krishna. But at the last minute, when the Agrasana Puja started, when Arjuna brought the offerings to Krishna, and all the Pandava brothers were in such a respectful and in a in a devotional mood, surrendering to Krishna and asking for Krishna's protection, Shishubala from the backside of the assembly started yelling at Krishna and abusing Krishna in such abusive language. He started calling Krishna. Due to the mercy of Saraswati Devi, this is how it is. Although Shishubala spoke all these things, everything, if you look at it in another way, it's all glorification of Krishna as well. That is how that was spoken. But anyway, Shishubala gave completely abused Krishna to such a degree. Eventually, Bhimasena came out and told Shishubala. Shishubala is also related to them. All these are related members of the family. Bhimasena told Shishubala, please don't talk like this. At least today, don't say like this, that. And Bhimasena was losing his temper. Eventually, he wanted to kill Shishubala then and there. It was only Yudhishthira Maharaj, out of goodness, tried to manage, calm everyone down. And Bhimasena only retreated after hearing, because he was respectful to Yudhishthira Maharaj so much that he pulled out of it. He didn't do anything about that at that time. But one thing, that Krishna was watching all these things from the seat, from the throne where Krishna was occupying. So he saw this, and eventually he decided that the time has come now that Shishubala had to go. So because the abusive has come to such a degree, that Krishna decided now it has reached its maturity, that it has come to its perfection now. Now the Shishubala can go back to the spiritual world. He sent the Sudarshan Chakram, took his head, and Shishubala, this soul from Shishubala, came and merged into Krishna's lotus feet. That is how it is explained in the Mahabharatam, also in the Bhagavatam. So when this incident happened, our Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was sitting there in that assembly, he couldn't believe this, what was happening. Here, somebody comes in and abuses Krishna right in front of him, as much, whichever way he liked it, and he goes back to the spiritual world. Goes, and here I am, 17 months and 17 days, I am paying obeisances, made all these offerings to Krishna. Still, I don't know where I am going now. Nothing has been said about me. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj was naturally, anybody will be confused, isn't it? You will also be, I will be confused, I'm sure. Because everyone, after all, has a desire to get out of this material world at some stage or the other. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj was also confused, exactly the same way, that Shishubala could go back to Krishna and merge himself into Krishna's body. In other words, he has gone back to the spiritual world, he doesn't have any more birth. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj started asking when Sri Narada Muni came in at that time. So, it was then Narada Muni had to explain these things to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And whatever Narada Muni has spoken to Yudhishthira Maharaj, it is the same thing what Sri Shukla Maharshi told Parikshita, also the same thing. Exactly the same thing, that is what it comes through. So, what it is saying there is that when Sri Narada Muni was present in the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Narada Muni walked into the scene, Yudhishthira Maharaj, this was after the sacrifice was over, Rajasuya sacrifice was finished, all the kings who have come from different parts of the world, they all went back. And everything became a little bit more peaceful now, that Yudhishthira Maharaj was happy that he had a, Krishna has accepted that invitation. Krishna is not, it's not so simple to get Krishna accept an invitation like that, first of all. That Yudhishthira Maharaj knew how much difficulty Yudhishthira Maharaj went through to get Krishna accept that invitation. Only you can, when you read it, you will appreciate that Yudhishthira Maharaj's devotion to Krishna. Only then you can appreciate that how much Krishna appreciates a devotee's attitude. Then so many, Duryodhana also invited Krishna. Krishna kept away from that. He didn't want anything to do with him. He said, but at the same time, when Yudhishthira Maharaj answered, Krishna also could have said no to Yudhishthira Maharaj. But it was only on the recommendation from Uddhava and also from Sri Narada Muni, Krishna decided to accept that invitation from Yudhishthira Maharaj. So somehow or the other, Krishna came to for this Rajasuya sacrifice. And this sacrifice was almost over, and it was then that they were all having a relaxed time after such a hectic period of 17 months and 17 days. And if you read about that Rajasuya sacrifice, how it was performed, it is such an interesting interesting festival that Yudhishthira Maharaj could execute that only due to Krishna's mercy. He couldn't have done it otherwise, because there is so many things that happened there in that sacrifice, and how Krishna was actually managing everything for Yudhishthira Maharaj. Anyway, after the sacrifice was over, they were executing, they were all in a relaxed mode when one day Narada Muni came on the scene. When Sri Narada Muni came there, they received him nicely. But this doubt was going through Yudhishthira Maharaj's mind all the time. He hasn't asked anybody yet. He hasn't asked Krishna, he hasn't asked Arjuna, he hasn't asked anybody else why this has happened to Shishupal. He thought he will ask somebody who knows about it. So with this in mind, Yudhishthira Maharaj was spending his time there. So it was then that one day Sri Narada Muni walked in. Narada Muni walked in, and when Narada Muni was in, Yudhishthira Maharaj received him nicely, offered him a nice throne and everything. And Narada Muni asked him, if you have any questions about anything, about spiritual, obviously they will discuss such topics, meant for advancing spiritually. So Yudhishthira Maharaj put forward these questions to Narada Muni. That is how this question came up. Exactly the same question what Parikshit Maharaj has asked Sri Shiva Maharshi here, the same question, in essence, was asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj to Sri Narada Muni. The difference was only this. Here, seeing Didi Devi's children getting killed by Indra and Krishna protecting Indra. There it was different. Their question was, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked this question, how come that Shishupala, who was such a demonic person, who has abused Krishna so badly, went back to the spiritual world, and he didn't say further, why I am here? That question he didn't ask. But it is indicated there. In that verses, that it is kept quietly in there. And Narada Muni also intelligent enough was able to understand that question. So Sri Narada Muni, in answer to that question, answered in such a way, but there is one more interesting thing Yudhishthira Maharaj had question to ask. You see, from Srimad Bhagavatam and from the questions and answers, why it is Parikshit Uvacha, Srishuka Uvacha, back and forth, coming and forth. The reason for that is that by questioning and answering, it also makes our mind to become thoughtful, to think why he has spoken like this. Otherwise, if it's just a story written like that, it will not give us that stimulation to think. But here, by questioning, it is making our mind also to think. The questions Parikshit Maharaj has asked has got some meaning behind it. Similarly, when Sri Shukadeva Maharaja, Shukadeva Maharaja is also answering in such a way that it stimulates our thoughts. So with all this in mind, so Yudhishthira Maharaj asked an interesting question that not only he said about Shishupala, he said, Shishupala has gone back to spiritual world, but I could not understand why Vena did not go back. Vena also Vena is a personality who denied there is no God, he said. We remember in the fourth canto when we discussed about King Vena, the story of King Vena, that King Vena was not much different than Shishupala in some sense. The only sense different was, first of all, he refused, there is no God, he said. And then he said, if there is any God, it's me, he said. That is how which modern atheists even won't say that. The atheists, normally, modern atheists don't say we are God. The most of them are a bit frightened of saying that. But at least they'll refuse the existence of God, or existence of Supreme Controller, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vena exactly did like that. So his question was that Shishupal went back, but Vena didn't go back. Vena was killed like this. Vena had to go to hellish planets also later. So he said, I'm a bit confused about it, he said. So in answer to that, Sri Narada Muni explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam that what is Krishna's position in relationship with all of us, how we relate with Krishna and how Krishna responds to that. Basically, Gopya Kamad Bhayal Kamsam Deshya Chaidyo Nrupade Chaidyadeya, that then Sambandho Vishnaya Sneha Yuyam Matya Vayam Vibhom. That is how in the Bhagavatam Sri Narada Muni is answering that. Gopya Kamal Bhayal Kamsam, that different people went back to Krishna by different means. For example, if you look at this verse carefully, you will see Gopya Kamal, when the gopis came to Krishna, first of all, Gopis got attracted to Krishna by his beauty. their lusty desires were there when they went for the Rasa Kreda, for the Rasa dance. Those desires started building up inside to associate with Krishna freely. So in other words, it is that particular emotion of the mind known as the lusty desires that has made them get attracted to Krishna. And when that relationship attained perfection, or in other words, it pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their mind was focused to such a degree with their mind in Krishna, they themselves became the greatest devotees of Krishna. So you can see, Gopya Kamad, that is the kamam or the lusty desire that turned gopis into the great devotees. Then if you look, Bhayal Kamsa, Kamsa also went back to the spiritual world. It is not that Krishna killed Kamsa and he went back, but you have to know how Krishna conscious Kamsa was before he got killed. That you can see in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When you read about Kamsa's sleepless nights he spent before Krishna killed him. And the night before, when Krishna was appearing in the prison, that night Kamsa was seeing everything as a manifestation of Krishna. He has come, he has come, he has come. He was always repeatedly saying this. And why? Because he was so much absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. Not in the right way, in the wrong way. Bhayal Kamsa, the fear that my enemy has come to kill me. That fear has become so powerful in his mind that ultimately the fear alone has made him to think about Krishna all the time. He could not take Krishna out of his mind. To such an extent, he got absorbed in Krishna. Just like gopis got absorbed due to their lusty desires for Krishna, Kamsa got absorbed to Krishna in the same way due to the fear. Gopya Kaman Bhayan Kamsa Deshe Chaityadayo Anurupam. Chedi kingdom is the Shishubala's kingdom. Chedi is the kingdom. And this Shishubala had is the third appearance of Jaya and Vijaya, isn't it? Shishubala and Dandavatram. So Shishubala had this benediction that he can offend the Krishna 100 times, and the 100th time when he talks or abuse Krishna, his head will go. This was already settled before. We had talked about this before, that in the Kunti Devi's prayers, this is very clearly mentioned, that when Krishna was tied to the mortar, he was standing there as Damodara. One day, at that particular day, Kunti Devi came to see Krishna. So Krishna is standing there, tied to this mortar, with the butter in the hand, in a small bowl, and he's eating that. Tears are coming from both the eyes, and he's looking at everybody. Is there anyone who can take me out of this condition? Mother Yashoda has given strong warning that today you won't get anything to play with, nothing to eat. You're going to stand here all day. This was very clearly given instructions. And it is then that Kunti Devi has come to see him. And Krishna is thinking, could she not find another day to come and see me? Is this the right day she has selected? Could she not find another day? Anything. So Kunti Devi specifically mentioned this in her prayers also. You can see that if you read Kunti Devi's prayer, she is mentions this, that I saw you like this standing there. And Krishna, when Kunti Devi came there, that Kunti Devi saw Krishna, and that was the first time Kunti Devi saw Krishna in her life. That is the first time Krishna was seen by Kunti Devi. And Kunti Devi felt immensely pleased. She has come from a long distance to see her brother's son, isn't it? Vasudeva Maharaj's son. Growing up in Nandamaharaj's home, but she knew everything, but she was pleased to see him. And after seeing Krishna, Kunti Devi in her heart felt, this is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is Kunti Devi's special mercy that Krishna has given to her. So anyway, Kunti Devi came and left. After some time, who came? Kunti Devi's younger sister. She comes. And when she comes, she is carrying also this baby, our Shishubala, with her. And this boy had 4 arms. And when Shishubala was brought closer, so Shishubala's mother didn't know about Krishna, but she knew one thing, that these 4 hands what Shishubala had, when somebody sees, 2 of these hands will drop off. And you can take it that he is going to kill him one day or the other. So as soon as Krishna and Shishupala saw each other, immediately two of his hands, as soon as Krishna saw, Ishta started thinking, what is this strange form coming towards me with four hands? This is what Krishna started looking at him. And when Krishna looked at like that, Shishupala also looked at him. And as soon as he looked, the two hands dropped off from his hands. At that time, Shishupala's mother realized that Krishna is the one who is going to kill Shishupala. So, there is a saying that is also recorded in the Mahabharata that Shishupala's mother told Krishna that you should not kill my son. And Krishna told Shishupala's mother, up to hundreds of offenses I will tolerate. When the 100th one happens, I will take his head. That's how the agreement was. So from that day, now you want to see something else. Who is Shishupala and Dandavatra? Shishupala and Dandavatra is related to Parikshit Maharaj. After all, Parikshit Maharaj has a bodily relationship with the Kunti Devi. And Kunti Devi's sister's children, they are Shishupala and Dandavatra. So the Shishupala and Dandavatra, when they went back to the spiritual world, our Parikshit Maharaj is sitting here and thinking, what will happen to me? Exactly like Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking, Parikshit Maharaj was also thinking, what's going to happen to me? So, in that moment, you will see there, Gopya kamad bhayat kamsa, deshya chaitya dayo nrubam, sambandho vishnaya snehat, yuyam bhaktya vayam vibhom. That is how Srinarada Muni answers. Gopis went back to Krishna because of they utilized this emotions of the mind called lust into its absolute way. In other words, it became so powerful that they also got perfection in their spiritual life. Kamsa got perfection in spiritual life due to his fear, because that fear came to its peak or its highest intensity. Shishupala abused Krishna, not in the normal way, to the maximum that he abused. He also got perfection in his spiritual life. He also went back. Then, sambandho vrishnaya snehal, all the vrishnis, all the adavas, they also got attached to Krishna because of their family relationship. Sambandho vrishnaya snehal yuyam. You Pandavas became attracted to Krishna and attached to Krishna due to your sneham, to your loving relationship. Bhakti avayam vibhom. Through our devotion, Srinarada Muni, we got attracted to Krishna. So you can see all these different emotions are characteristics of the mind and not intelligence. This is what we have to remember, that it is the mind that plays the major role in Krishna consciousness. That when the mind is changing, if any of these emotions one has, if one can utilize being attracted to Krishna, automatically these emotions will give, when it gets into its peak, into the highest intensity, automatically one gets liberated. That's all. That's all it is. This is what Krishna has, neither demons or devotees. He, as far as he is concerned, modes of nature has nothing to do with Krishna. But the interesting thing here is, you will find Kamsa going back, Shishupala going back, and so many others going back, but the devotees are all staying back. So why is that? Is it not better to become Shishupala or Kamsa rather than become a devotee? This question automatically comes, isn't it? And it is a fact also that these emotions like hate, anger, and inimical feelings, all these are much more powerful than love. Love and attachment for the just like in this material world, you can see that if you love somebody, that love always is very much conditional. In other words, sometimes you love him, sometimes you think, oh, it's all after all. He's just a friend, you know, so much, I can do so much for him, what can I do more than that? Sometimes you show some love and affection to each other. But you take hate, or you take the enmity towards somebody else, you don't have to worry about it. It will burn day in and day out inside. Even if you try to throw it away, it will come back, even in the sleep. When getting up in the morning, you will see that person. He might have said 10 years ago something, one word he has spoken. That's enough for another 50 years in life. Go along with it. That will stay. So from there, what do you see? You see that the hate, the inimical propensities are much more stronger. Even here, Srinarada Muni says the same thing. That is why all the demons are going back to the spiritual world. Indra was still here in the heavenly planet, managing the heavenly planet. and he was stuck there. Why? Because he did not have that inimical feeling towards Krishna, which was perfected by the... Perfected means it was not perfected by them, but due to the propensities were so powerful of the mind towards the inimical feelings, that those emotions liberated the demons. That's all. That's all it has got to do with it. It has nothing to do with Krishna. Krishna, he is always equal to everybody. Just like the three modes of nature. Three modes of nature has nothing to do with the soul. It is the modes of nature. The soul has no connection to it. It is our nature, our activities, the consciousness that is being affected by the lower modes of nature. So, this is how that question was answered by Sri Shugan to Parikshit, that quoting Sri Narada Muni and quoting the story, quoting Sri Narada Muni's discussion with Yudhishthira Maharaj, Gopya Gopya Kamal Bhayal Kamsa Deshya Chaya Dayomurva Sambandho Vishnaya Sneha Yuyam Bhaktya Vayam Vibhom. After that verse, in another verse, he said, which Rupa Goswami often quoted, is Yena Gena Piva Yena Mana Krishna Niveshayal. From this, what do we understand? We understand that somehow or the other, if the mind is absorbed in Krishna, that alone is the cause for liberation, nothing else. Yena Gena Upa Yena Mana Krishna Niveshayal. Somehow or the other, if mind gets absorbed in Krishna, automatically you are liberated from this conditioned state. So whether it happens through hate, whether it happens through love for devotion, obviously the right way to go is through devotion. Because only through devotion that loving relationship will last. Otherwise you get liberated, go back and finished with it. But loving relationship to Krishna is much more blissful and satisfying to the living entity. And that is why Sri Narada Muni wrote Bhakti Sutram. Bhakti Sutram and Srimad Bhagavatam has been compiled for this purpose, to develop that attachment for Krishna's lotus feet. So then the question came, why nothing happened to Vena? Vena was also like Shishuval, isn't it? In many ways, Vena also, you see, but Vena didn't go back. The reason for that, Sri Rajani Swamiji says in the Bhagavatam, that the reason why Vena could not go back was that Vena denied God, first thing. He didn't accept anybody as God. In other words, he had no feeling for God. He had nothing to hate or love. He just said there is nothing exists. As far as I am concerned, he said, I am God. That's all. So he, in other words, there were no emotions in him, neither good or bad, that has been a cause for him to liberate himself. In other words, there was no relationship with Krishna in any way. Although he denied the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or presence of any God, he identified himself as the controller, and therefore Vena could not make it because of this. So in other words, you can see that somehow or the other, if one of the human emotions in the mind, somehow or the other is built up in either loving or hating Krishna, ultimately when it gets to its highest intensity or when it speaks, at that time Krishna comes. If he is a demon, he sends him back taking his cut off. Or if it's a devotee, he sends him back in one or the other. That's all it is. This is all what is Srimad Bhagavatam is about. So that's why we find that this one question, which was raised in the first chapter of the seventh canto, is starting from Sri Narada Muni, and Yudhishthira Maharaj goes on. And it is after that that the story of Nasimhadev comes in. And that we will talk later. But Srinivasan, if there's any questions or comments, please.
How long will it take you to speak?
That depends on you, how much you can hate him. It's of course through the hating process it's much easier than the loving process. As you have seen, Shishubala made it, Kamsa made it, and so many others made that. So the process of hating is easier. But on the other hand, the loving process is more difficult than the process of hate. Devotional process is process of love, not hate. So that process naturally takes longer time than the other process, than the hating process. But how long does it take? That depends on your relationship with Krishna. When Krishna wants that to happen, it can happen in a second also. But as much as a devotee's mind is developing more in Krishna consciousness, automatically these emotions will also get stronger in mind. The loving relationship with Krishna, the personal relationship with Krishna will build up. And when that loving relationship gets stronger, material attachment will diminish. And at the same time, all other attraction for material world will go. As you remember, if you read Madhavendra Puri's story, how he used to wander around, not caring for the body, not caring for anything else. Why? Because of the type of consciousness that personality was in. Vilomangalam, for example. There were such persons who have reached that level of Krishna consciousness that they could act like that. So it depends. When one advances in such levels, one day, by Krishna's grace, others also can attain that. But this is the what Bhagavatam is saying is that this is the principle behind it. That any of the human mind, we have different kinds of emotions, different kinds of feelings we have. If you can direct all towards Krishna somehow or the other, if you are hating somebody, they say you should hate Krishna, not anybody else. If you are loving somebody, you love Krishna. Because ultimately, it is directed towards Krishna. That is what makes it happen. If it is directed towards anyone else, it doesn't happen. Why? Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, if your loving relationship, hating relationship, anything, if it is directed towards Krishna, ultimately, it will result in liberation.
What is the difference between Rakshasa and the demon?
Say that again.
Difference between Rakshasa and demons.
Yes. Demons are in the mode of passion. Rajogunam is the predominating nature of the demons, asuras. What the word asura means, one who enjoys sura. Sura means senses. One who enjoys sense gratification excessively, they are known as asuras. And the demons generally are referred to the asuras. Hiranyakashipu, they are all considered to be belong to the asuras. The Rakshasas are those, they have certain characteristics of the Rakshasas mentioned, that they are all, most of them can eat human flesh. They have that kind of propensity. In other words, their food habits are in the mode of tamogunam, in the lowest modes of nature. Kumbhakarna, Ravana's brother, they sleep a longer time. You know, he used to sleep 6 months, awakens, and 6 months he used to sleep. Probably you'll be suited very well for this weather. that he could live like that. And that is a typical Rakshasa nature. That asuras are not sleepy or lazy. Asuras are always active. You can see that their activities are such that they are always busy with something. They'll create something new. If they can't, they don't get satisfaction otherwise. The other thing, now we move on to the next chapter, you will find that the devotees and the demons and the, for example, devas, the asuras and the rakshasas, or the devotees, demons and the, I don't know what the English word for rakshasas is, another category. These are all different species in the creation, that's all. Like we have gandharvas, kinnaras, charanas, like that, rakshasas one. So, what is the difference between a devotee and the demon, asura? Asura, for example, in the Bhagavad, in the next chapter it comes that Hiranyakashipu was very much aware of all the Vedic literature. He knew everything in the Vedas, and he was very philosophical also about everything. But the difference between the demon and the devotee is, the demon knows God also exists. He also knows God exists. But anything what he will agree will be on his terms, not on Krishna's terms. That's the difference. You can see most of the demonic nature is always, they'll go to God sometimes. But when they approach God, their approach will be such that they want God to agree on their terms. Everything has to happen on their condition, terms and conditions set by the demons. So this is where the difference comes in. Whereas devotees, they accept what Krishna has instructed or what Krishna has spoken. So, like this, there are characteristics which differentiate between the demons, devotees and the రాక్షసస్.
You mentioned that when you were talking about the mind, you were putting your hand on the heart, and when you were talking about intelligence, you were putting your head on, hand on your head.
Yeah.
Can you just elaborate on that?
Yes, I'm only going by the modern science. Because I don't know myself. Science says it's all here. That's what everybody says, you've got good brain, they say like that, isn't it? So on that basis, I'm saying that it must be here. So exact location, mind is, nobody knows where the mind is. Mind is present in one, but we all know, even the scientists accept there's a thing called mind. And in the Shastram it says there, Sangalpam and Vigalpam, the two characteristics of the mind, acceptance and rejections, that's what mind does. For example, when a new idea is given to us, that the comparison is made, the intelligence is analyzing it, but whether to accept it or reject it, that decision is made by the mind. But the location-wise, normal understanding is because the spirit soul and the super soul is present here. The consciousness, this is considered to be where the center of the consciousness as well. So therefore, we will say manasakshi. You know, in the court, when you go and give witness, they touch here and say, they don't touch here, they don't say that, they touch here. Why do they touch here? Because it's here that they accept. For my mind, I accept. Or in other words, when I take an oath, for example, you take from Bhagavad Gita or Bible or whatever it is, you hold like this and say that I take this oath on behalf. So we have to assume that the mind is present here, but nobody knows exactly where that location is. It is a very subtle element in the body. But importance of mind is, in the process of Krishna consciousness, the mind is the one which is more important than the intelligence. Intelligence can't help you. There are sometimes, that's why sometimes what happens is, many times the devotees take to the intellectual process of trying to understand. And intellectually you read Bhagavatam, you can read and understand it. If you read it carefully for few years, you will get most of the things what's mentioned there. But what Srimad Bhagavatam eventually wants to bring about that change in us, that is to happen in the mind. And that will only happen if Bhagavatam is approached in the same way as it is meant to be. And this is the reason why I'm saying that we cannot change the process. Process has to stay. It's not difficult otherwise and therefore, every time when you take to studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it's necessary that you follow the principles of mode of goodness very precisely. Anything, although it may look attractive, it may look helpful in advancing in spiritual life, but because all this knowledge has come from the mode of passion, it has got that element of passion in that as well, and therefore it's not supporting us. Whereas the original process, when all the system was very clearly defined, that you study Srimad Bhagavatam in this particular way, and that will bring the result, because that is the proof is that it has already happened like that. It has shown its results. And if you stick to that process, it will not fail. It will work.
Yes.
Sadvasana and Durvasana, yes. Yeah.
That everybody has got either both of them or...
Yes. Everybody has all of both of them, yes. All of us have. Yes, it's all lying there inside. They're all lying there in a very hidden condition inside. Sadvasana and Durvasana, they're lying there. It has not completely gone away. But if you cultivate this Shubhavasana by association, by following the principles, in course of time they will dry up. When it doesn't get an opportunity to sprout, eventually it will dry up, but it takes time. And that's what spiritual life is all about.
So spiritual life means to dry up all the vasanas?
Durvasanas. Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay. So how come that they came to many types originally in first place into this?
Due to the karma. What karma we have performed. For example, why there is so much attraction for sex life? People are willing to break away marriages and go out and do anything to satisfy their desires, isn't it? Why is that coming from? Why is people have sometimes you see people try to control alcohol and then they find it very difficult to stop it because they got used to it after some time. And then they have organizations or so many things to get help and all that, isn't it? So why is that? They find it difficult to give it up. So many things, isn't it? So all these different habits, I'm only talking about one or two things. There are so many things like that. So many nature in gambling or anything else if you take. These vasanas have come to us because in previous lifetimes, we were engaged in these karma before. For example, and the intoxication is possible in the animal's life even. There are animals who get intoxicated. Elephants get intoxicated by the coconut alcohol, you know that. And when he gets intoxicated, he acts in a very strange way as well. So when that intoxication habit did not come from this life, it was already there lying in the form of a vasana. But when you are staying home at the age of 15 or 16, when the government says, now you are allowed to go to the pub, or the parent says, oh, give him a glass of this, let him also enjoy like I am enjoying, father is saying. So the party starts, and then he also gets pulled into it. Why? Initially he knows this thing tastes so dirty, and it has no taste. But still, that vasana inside is telling him, I think it's good, I must have tasted before. Something is encouraging from inside. And he starts his first glass. And then from then on, the vasana develops further and takes over. So what I'm saying is, all these karma, what we have done in previous lifetimes, they stay in our vasanas, in the form of the consciousness, in the vasana shariram, or the causal body, that's called. So that vasanas, when it gets an opportunity, it will come out. It will take shape somehow. And then you will act on basis of that. That is why it's called vasana. It's not based on any discrimination, based on any other logic or reasoning. It will just come out according to your hidden vasanas inside. So by serving great personalities, they will offer this mercy. By their mercy, one can wipe out these vasanas away. For a long period of time it takes. But when that is all wiped out, the consciousness is very clear and purified, then only his activities will also be on that basis. The chances of him performing such sinful things is very minimum from then on. So that is how that thing works.
Is it why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that when you chant him, he cleans the mirror of mind?
Yes.
That's what.
Yes. Yes. While chanting the holy Krishna's holy name has that potency to purify our anything inside us. It is a purificatory process. Chedo darpanam arjanam, it says, isn't it? So chedo darpanam arjanam is nothing but wiping out all these things. But because we don't chant very carefully and we don't chant with the right understanding, often it takes longer time for us to get that result. But the process is right. If you simply chant, that chanting will purify these vasanas. As you were saying, that one vasana has made somebody as a devotee, someone who was addicted to sinful life, and one day he decides suddenly to give it up. Why? Because there was some sadvasana inside, and that sadvasana, when he got the right of association with the right person, immediately he gave up all his bad habits, isn't it? And he starts chanting, he starts taking spiritual life seriously. Similarly, even in spiritual life, as much as you start chanting and you make advancement in spiritual life, automatically these vasanas which are inside will start disappearing one after the other. The only problem is that there is so much inside to clear up. It's not a little bit, it's a lot there. And that's why it's taking so long a time as well.
You know, it's a bit of a controversial point, but somebody was asking, you know, why do the ex-Gurukulis, you know, who suffered in those early days, and they're committing suicide? How is this connected with vasanas, do you think, or your understanding? You know, is there some connection? That's how I wanted to sort of think about it. Just to comprehend it myself. So.
Yeah. This situation, what they went through, is something you have to accept certain fundamentals of life, like for example, that those who are involved in that, they are to a large degree responsible for all that what has happened. Then, but why did this happen? Sinful activities, how the reactions of sinful activities works in our life, that's sometimes very difficult to analyze, because the reason why it happened was that the persons who were involved, they had obviously durvasanas inside. It was that durvasanas, when it got the right environment, it came out. And though they did what they wanted to, whoever has done it, they did that. But why it happened to them, to those people who are who have suffered due to that, that's the question, isn't it? Why others did it, those who did it, that is very clear, because there were had durvasanas inside, and the durvasanas have not gone away, either coming from the previous life or even in this life, prior to taking to Krishna consciousness. Such vasanas must have been there. Only when it got the right opportunity and the facilities, it came out. That's what it is. But as far as those who are affected by that, why this has happened? It may sound a bit cruel to say that there was an unknown reason behind it. But the fact is that sometimes when a living entity, Prabhupada, that is how Prabhupada has explained that, when a living entity suffers in this material world, in any form, doesn't matter which form he is suffering, you have to understand that there is a reason behind it. Without that, it couldn't happen. Distress and misery, what experience one is coming from sinful life, it may not necessarily from this life, could have been from the past life. So, due to our own different karma, everyone has a karmic account, material nature arranges certain people to meet with each other. And in that condition, they react in these ways. In these ways what we see. But it is better not to analyze this too much, because it will not take us anywhere. As much as we understand that our interest is to curbing these vasanas, these impious propensities in us. That is what the spiritual life is meant for. To take us to a higher consciousness, elevated consciousness, where we do not get provocated by such propensities in us. That's the goal of all these things. But generally you can say that it is these vasanas that cause this kind of situations that prompted them to act like that. And those who have done that, and those who have suffered due to that, is due to their own practically previous reactions of some sinful activity in some form has pursued them or followed them in this life as well. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.